that many people, I speak about specialists, believe that it's practically impossible to communicate by speech between two people if there would not be a kind of telepathy. Naturally, that there is a lot of faking in that field, plenty of it. But here come again, this nervous system comes in. One controlled experiment was made, I believe, in Cornell University. There was some sort of a mediocre mother, and she had a boy of, I don't know, 12 or so, a moron, or an imbecile, I don't remember what kind of category he was. And this was an experiment made between mother and the son under the controls of professors, so there would be no monkey business. So mama was behind a screen with a doctor. A doctor in between, and behind another screen on the other end of a large room, was the son, also with a doctor. Well, no monkey business. And the one with mama picked up a piece of newspaper, and mama was reading silently. That's why screens and doctors, supervision and somebody in between and so on. Because many people, for instance, when they read, they move their mouth. Eventually, the boy could see it. You could begin to read what mama read. Read the lips. This is some sort. But here it was all foreseen and cut off anything of this sort. What mama was reading silently, the son at the other end of the room, behind a screen, was repeating verbally. Today, the sort of mystery about those things really disappears because we have, with the radio and with all the achievements of the radio, do you realize that without any doubt we are organic radios? Without any doubt. And there is no escape from it. That we do not know the exact mechanisms, that's still a different problem. And no doubt that we don't know. I say, there's no doubt about that. But what happens is some sort of telepathy does exist. Do you know what we did in the First War? They have done it probably this war too. Except, of course, they don't advertise this. Why? Because the average fellow would laugh at them. Look, those crazy people, they carry the war with clear voice. They would laugh. So this is never spoken about. But in the First War, in the general staff, we use clear voice. I will tell you what for. Imagine that you are a general and the intelligence department, we have serious suspicion that you may be a spy. What to do about it? To put an intelligence officer after you is very, very difficult. You can imagine a spy means court-martialed and shot. An investigation alone is a disgrace. It's playing with human life. So they don't do it. They have to have something more to go and inspect his house and whatnot cannot be done, say with a general. They put a clairvoyant on the fellow who reads letters in his pocket and then carried that work on. And when, ultimately, repeatedly, the report is that there is fishy correspondence in his pocket, they finally put intelligence on it. And do you know that in about 50% of that procedure was correct? There was a very well-known clairvoyant in New York, and some friends of ours gave us a dinner. Two of husband-wife, I and my wife. And as the entertainment, they invited that clairvoyant $400 a evening. I am a practical man, so I speak in extensional terms. We were asked to put a name in our pocket. We went to separate rooms. We scribbled on a piece of paper something and put in our pocket. I, being a dirty skunk, put something which no Anglo-Saxon, English-speaking fellow could possibly pronounce. It was the name of my own mother. Quite simple name, but no English-speaking person could possibly pronounce the name. I was then in my uniform, I believe. I put that bit of paper in my pocket, ready for performance. My wife put the name of her teacher, childhood teacher, whom nobody knew. I didn't know the name of that teacher. Well, this was an English name, but quite simple. But nobody knew. There was no cerebral suction about it. I put in my pocket, but of course, we were all sober. And my wife put it in evening dress behind her corsage, that piece of paper. She could not pronounce it. But I can't spell it. And he did.